You're listening to the LA Rams Report's Flipping the Tables podcast.
First and 10 from the 27. Warner back to throw. Rainbow's the far sideline, and it is caught by Isaac Bruce. Makes a move to the 30, 25, 20, and they won't catch him today.
Yes. 73.
Touchdown Rams!
73 yards for the Reverend Ike.
And now, here's your hosts, Josh Webb and Cameron Worrell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to an all-new Flipping Tables podcast. I'm your host, Josh Webb, and as always, I am joined by my esteemed colleague, basically passing down guru, former NFL vet, and X's and O's. I don't want to say no at all, because that's a bad phrase, but X's and all's expert. X's and O's expert. Cam Worrell. Cam, how you doing today, man?
Doing good, man. I'm probably doing a little bit better than you, considering, you know, you had a long session, it looked like, over the weekend, and you got to be feeling some pain today.
I was a miserably long session, man. For those who don't know, I'm working on an impressive Marvel sleeve, and I say impressive because it is impressive. But I am working on a Marvel comic sleeve, and this week I added Silver Surfer and a deceased Ant-Man to my arm, along with various different accoutrements to make it more sleeve-like, because before it had just been about five or six characters hanging around. Now we're doing the blending process, and my arm's on fire. And it's funny that you mentioned that I was in pain, because I was literally crying. At one point, and I'm not ashamed to admit this, because, like, I'm not that you've met me. I'm not the burliest dude for my size. Like, if you were my size, I'm damn sure you'd be way more cut than I am. I'm like, Ryan and I are just not built to be big. But I'm bony, man. And as he was hitting over the elbow, like, I had taken as much as I possibly could. And I'm, like, streaming through tears, like, can I get a break? And he's just, like, laughing. We're almost done. And I'm like, you didn't hear me. I said I need a break. And so he finally gave me one. But I'm going to have to release some of the images of my face on Twitter. They're worth about 1,000 words at the minimum. I had somebody down there taking pictures of my face as he was going over my arm, and there are some priceless photos on there.
I bet, man. Those are, like, I only have two tattoos on each side of my ribs, but when that needle hits a bone, there's nowhere to go. That pain is there. So I feel your pain for sure.
I just grabbed my ribs when you said that, because, like, my arm's still hurting, and then I grabbed my ribs thinking, no. But we got a great episode today, and we got a great guest. We got a bit of a minor late start, so we'll go ahead and get him on right now. But we're going to be bringing on Matt Waldman, which, if you're not familiar with his work, man, this guy is basically a draft expert. There aren't too many people on the planet who know as much about football as Mr. Matt Waldman, who is a rookie scouting portfolio guy. He's a Football Guy staff writer. He's the associate editor of Terry Magazine. He's the guy. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get on Mr. Waldman, and we will begin with our Rams conversation. And we're back, and we are now live with Matt Waldman. Matt, how's everything going this? I mean, I know it's just Monday, but how was the weekend, man?
Yeah, weekend was nice. You know, spent time with family on Mother's Day. It's a pretty nice looking day here in Georgia for a spring Monday. So, you know, no complaints here.
Yeah, you know, it's been peculiar weather out in California, but it's starting to even off into those, I guess you could say, those images that everybody on the internet is used to thinking of when they think of California. It hasn't quite been that way for a minute. But before we get into what it is that we're here to discuss today, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to let the folks know who you are, what you do, and why they should be following you on Twitter if they're not already, really.
Oh, well, I'm a writer. I'm a staff writer at footballguys.com, which is a fantasy football website. And I also have my own blog called The Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And for the past 11 years, I've been writing a publication that's an annual online book that analyzes skill prospects for the NFL draft, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. And so you see, I do a lot of work on my blog, a lot of it's video analysis. And I also have a YouTube channel called the RSP Film Room, where I invite a variety of guests ranging from quarterback coaches to former running backs in the league to a lot of different writers and analysts to just study tape together and talk about what we see, talk about strategy, talk about, you know, technique at the positions, and just learn from each other about the game and share that with the audience. And so that's basically what I do. And you know, it's something that, you know, you can follow me at Matt Waldman. And that's basically my Twitter handle. And you can check out the work there.
You and Cam are like a dream pairing, at least on this podcast, because that's what Cam is. He's the X's and O's guru. So without much further ado, Cam, I'll kick it over to you, and we'll go in our regular snake fashion for guests. And why don't you lead things off with the golf questions, because that's why we're all here, right?
Yeah, if we're talking about the Rams, we have to talk about Jared Goff. Matt, first of all, appreciate you joining us. Let's get right into it. The Rams gave up a lot. They wanted to jump up and have their choice of quarterbacks. They get to one. They take Jared Goff. When you look at Goff as a prospect, what do you see, you know, his ceiling, maybe his floor, and his fit with the Rams as a rookie this year?
Yeah, I really liked him. And it was an interesting discovery to really watch him more and more, because, I mean, I think a lot of the – some people will look at the Bear Raid offense and say, you know, there were execs in the NFL earlier this year who were saying, well, all he does is stand back there and just throw the ball and just gets to cut it loose. And, you know, that system hides a lot, and maybe he doesn't have full responsibility over, you know, pre-snap reads or line calls or different types of things that you would want to see from a full-fledged NFL leader under center. But from what I saw of Goff, I was really impressed with him, more so than really any quarterback I've seen in the past 2 years. And I was a big fan of Jameis Winston, and I liked Marcus Mariota just fine. I just felt like that from what I've seen of Goff is you have a guy who has a tremendous amount of confidence in his skill to throw the football. He has excellent accuracy, placement of the football, and really all ranges of the field. He may not have the arm strength that you're looking for, compared to, say, guys like Paxton Lynch and Cardale Jones, and maybe even Wentz to a degree, but his arm strength is more than capable for what you would consider for an NFL starter, and his accuracy at every range of the field, I thought, was the best of all the quarterbacks in this particular class, and maybe even for the past 2 years. I particularly love how he keeps his feet under him, because one of the most important aspects of really quarterbacking is the skill to really be able to move from progression to progression, keep your feet under you so that you can throw an accurate pass when you're moving from route to route. And he makes full field reads. I thought that he does a good job processing the game fast enough that maybe he doesn't have full control, or it was argued he didn't have full control over line protections. But in terms of what he processes with the defense there, he's able to see subtle cues or tells that the defenders give and process it quickly and find a simple solution to the problem that the defense poses. And to me, it's those simple solutions that really make a difference between good and great quarterbacking. It's not just how many plays of great difficulty you can make, but finding simple solutions in difficult situations. And he does that well. And then his pocket presence, just his ability to move around the pocket, even just subtle steps, a step or two to avoid a defender, bait him last second, keep your feet under you, and hit that accurate throw. I don't care how mobile you are. If you can't reset and throw accurately, it doesn't matter to me in terms of it's not as important to me as it is to be able to really just be able to make a small move and then be able to fire the ball. And I think he does an excellent job in all of these areas. And if there's anything about him that I'm not you know, that he's going to have to get better at. It's just maturity of understanding where his limits are. And I think that's common with a lot of quarterbacks who are top prospects entering year after year after year, is just understanding that he has to, there's times that he can be a little overconfident or arrogant with some of the placement calls that he has with throwing the ball into tight coverage. But he's also going to have, it's also nice that he will make those decisions, because in the NFL he'll have to.
Yeah, he's got a little Peyton Manning to him when you watch him keep his feet active in the pocket. I always see Peyton Manning when I see quarterbacks do that. What's it going to take for him to make the transition from the offense he ran at Cal to the system that he's going to run in L.A.? He's going to be under center a lot more. It's going to be a run-first play-action system. What's it going to take for him to get himself ready to play week one down in L.A.?
I think more than anything, to be on the same page with the receivers that he has, and make sure that he's on the same page with the type of reads that they're going to make, the type of hot reads that are going to be in existence there, and to be confident in those calls, and to make sure that he's confident with the core that he's going to be working with. I agree with you about the Peyton Manning. Seen the Peyton Manning in his feet, and it was something that I've actually commented on, that footwork is a lot like how a quarterback communicates. You could almost make it a parallel with how people speak. And Peyton Manning, the way that his feet moved, they were kind of jittery in the pocket, and people would criticize him, but it's kind of like criticizing a genius who may have a little bit of a stammer or stutter. And I think that Jared Goff, when he moves his feet, you can see a little bit of a jitteriness in there, but it's not anything that's detracting from what he's doing to deliver the football. And I think it's just more the product of an active mind anticipating what's going to be happening in front of him, and the feet can have a little bit of nervous energy. So I think that he's going to be fine with his drops. I think he's going to be, he's going to handle pressure reasonably well. But I think that, like with a lot of top prospects that you're looking at in the class, it's about being able to read the correct defense, and there's going to be more defensive complexity that he's going to see. He's going to see more hybrid coverage looks, where he's going to see man on one side of the field and zone on another, and he'll have to learn to know the difference and not make the mistake thinking that he has one or the other, when in fact he has both in a certain range. And he's going to have to get used to the fact that every defender on the field, even the defensive lineman, may be as athletic or more athletic than he is. And so he's going to have to accelerate his process at times, but at the same time, he's going to have to learn to be able to play calm with that accelerated process. And this just takes time. It takes learning your limits. It takes getting hit and sacked and turning the ball over, but not going into a shell. And I don't think he's going to go into a shell, based on what I've seen with him leading a team that, you know, that only won one game his first year, and then leading to a bowl game in his third year.
I want to, we'll circle back to Goff in just 2.5 seconds, but I want to circle back to that comment you made about the receivers, because that was something that Cam and I had talked about a little bit coming into this draft, especially after the Rams made the move to get Goff. They didn't have those picks in the middle round. Well, I called the second and the third the middle rounds. I don't know if that's technically accurate, but everything after that came really in the fourth round later. And we knew that coming into this season, one of the biggest problems plaguing the Rams offense, aside from, you know, having a quarterback that could deliver the football on a consistent basis, was really lack of a playmaking threat at the wide receiver position. You have Tavon Austin on there, but as Cam always says on this podcast, Tavon Austin is not a guy that a defense is going to move a second guy over for. He's just not going to command that kind of respect on a defense. I don't know that Kenny Britt's going to do that. Did the Rams do anything at all to address that with either Michael Thomas or Pharaoh Cooper moving into the 2016 season? Or is this something that they're just going to have to get Goff comfortable this year and then maybe look at getting him a playmaking threat next year?
Excuse me. Really, the conventional answer is the latter of the two, which is that they're going to have to get Goff comfortable this year. They'll have to make the most of what he has available, and then let's just see what's available next year, either through free agency or the draft, and how these receivers develop. I think the way that you mentioned that Tavon Austin isn't a guy that's going to move another guy over, you know, defenders over and have bracket coverage or, you know, create more attention to wherever he is. That's absolutely the truth that, you know, it's Tavon Austin is, I hate to put it pejoratively this way, but he's a gadget player. And basically, from what I know, talking with people who are inside the league, they tend to believe that gadget players don't tend to have really sustained production in the NFL. In most cases, there are exceptions to the rule, and there are guys who develop into more complete players from their gadget player days. Hines Ward was a good example of that with Pittsburgh back in the day. But you look at Farrell Cooper, and he's, you know, they already termed him a slot receiver, which is accurate at this stage of his career. And maybe he turns into a physical player who can do what Hines Ward did. But I think that right now you have to look at him as, you know, there aren't a lot of slot players in the league. There are guys you can name certainly easily, but it's not the position where you're going to make the biggest impact in a receiving core and in the passing game that's going to dictate mismatches on a regular basis without a lot of surrounding talent. Now, Mike Thomas is a guy I really liked, and I think that, you know, Jeff Fisher and Les Snead described him accurately as a guy that made outstanding plays with the ball in the air, skill to adjust to the football. I think everyone who's a Rams fan listening to this podcast has probably seen some of the highlight catches that he's made that are just, you know, that really border on some of the best catches I've seen from a receiver in the past decade. He is a pretty decent route runner. I think he's only going to get better, and he is a true outside receiver. So if he exceeds expectations, because I see a lot of people say he's not that great of an athlete, I think he has starter speed, starter quickness. He may not have that, you know, Andre Johnson, Dante Moncrief, Calvin Johnson size that people associate with the starter. But I think you guys remember a guy by the name of Isaac Bruce, who was pretty darn quick, who can get behind people and had a very lengthy career as a 180 to 190 pound player. And Mike Thomas is certainly bigger than that. And I think that he could have an outside shot of developing into that type of primary guy. And then looking at some of the late players, they have Marquez North, who is was a freshman phenom at Tennessee before he got hurt. He has that type of size, strength, hand-eye coordination, and body control that if the injuries were the only reason why he couldn't put it together, the Rams might have stolen a guy who can provide that type of that type of attention, or take that type of attention away from a defense, and then you might have a nice little bind if both Thomas and North work out.
I want to bring up another name, because you mentioned Steele, and I actually had another question in the chamber, and then when you mentioned Steele, it just automatically replaced it. I'm a Pac-12 guy, and one of the guys that I've really, really loved, and he gets absolutely no attention, largely because their program has been pitiful for the better part of I don't know how long, but Nelson Spruce. He's a guy that I understand why he didn't get drafted. I get all of that. But he has been so incredibly consistent for Colorado at a time when, really, you could argue that they were the worst program in the Pac-12. This is a guy who put up the numbers and got the job done day in and day out. And when I see those kind of numbers at a program like Colorado in the Pac-12, where they do have bigger defensive backs, physical defensive backs, I have to think that this is a guy who can possibly make an impact down the line. Am I incorrect in that thinking?
No, I don't think you're incorrect at all. I think Nelson Spruce, one of the things that's really nice about his skill set is he is a good route runner, and he understands how to thrive against physical play. And those are the two really underrated aspects about wide receiver play in the NFL. A lot of people really can overemphasize 40 speed. And it's not really, you know, really, if you're at somewhere between 4.65 and 4.7, that may seem unbelievably slow to the general public. But if you run good routes and you have a better 20 shuttle time and a good three cone time that shows that you can bend your hips fast so that you can stop fast. It's more important to stop fast than it is to run fast. And there's lots of good stuff you can find on YouTube about route running that will show you that between guys who run like 4.7 and 4.3 40s, and you can see what happens when one runs good routes and one doesn't. And Spruce understands how to do that. And then he also knows how to deal with physical play so that he can earn position against the defender and that he can maintain that position downfield. Now, with players who are a little slower on this in this regard, it means that they're going to have to gain the trust of their quarterback and have the type of rapport where the quarterback trusts him enough to throw the ball even when he may not look wide open. But that's what the NFL quarterback is supposed to be able to do. And I would say that Spruce is the type of guy that you could probably see down the line developing into a nice possession receiver who can occasionally get downfield on play action. I think he has a fighting chance, and I wouldn't count him out.
I just want to ask a quick question, and then Cam, back over to you. I don't know that everything translates, but Nelson Spruce reminds me a lot of Steve Smith when he was at USC before going to the Giants. Like, I look at a receiver like that and think of how invaluable they can be. Everybody remembers Dwayne Jarrett's 4th and 9, you know, with the Bush push game. But what people fail to remember is prior to that, there were a lot of possession catches that kept the Trojans in that game. Does Spruce bring a little bit of that? And is there a possibility that and I know that this sounds cheeky, but I look at a guy like him and I say, okay, there's a reason you bring him in. He's familiar with the Pac-12. He's familiar with the West Coast. He's a young, impressive receiver who's hungry to learn. And if you put him with a guy like Goff, you mentioned Isaac Bruce. And just down the line, it feels like these guys, Pharaoh Cooper, Nelson Spruce, and so on and so forth, could be that. I think the Rams are trying to position Jared Goff with a young crop of guys who come from similar systems that Goff can then grow up with and grow into, maybe trying to replicate a bit of that Kurt Warner, Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce magic.
I certainly think they're hoping to have supply Goff with enough receivers that they can hit on a couple of them to grow with. I like that you mentioned Steve Smith. Steve Smith was one of my favorite receivers from that class. I write about him and should do video and talk about him a lot. I would say that a guy like the Giant Sterling Shepard, he was a guy that I compared directly with Steve Smith, and the Giants ended up drafting him, which kind of tells you they saw the same thing. The difference between Smith and Spruce, or the similarities between Smith and Spruce, is that obviously they both catch the ball well. They operate in physical coverage reasonably well. They understand the route techniques they need to get separation. The thing about Smith that was always underrated is that he really did have a good 40 time. He ran a sub 4.5 40. He also had an excellent three cone drill and short shuttle that showed the type of quickness that you're looking for from a guy who could be who could get deep one-on-one against a corner, even without the aid of, terrific technique on an every down basis. Whereas I think with Spruce, he has a smaller margin for error to be able to get that type of separation. But I think that, as an underneath player, as someone who can run some timing routes for you along the sideline, I think that those are the types of things that will be worthwhile with him. I like the late round picks that they had a little, and some of the free agents that they looked at a little bit more than what I see with Spruce. But I do understand where you're coming from with that, and I don't have any argument with it.
Well, one of the pass catchers they did draft was Tyler Higbee, tied in from Western Kentucky, a kid that, I thought they could possibly target in this draft. They ended up getting him in the 4th round. A kid that played at Western Kentucky under Bobby Petrino, a very explosive offense. Can the Rams expect him to make this transition and be a piece for this offense that Jared Goff can count on in 2016?
I think as long as this court case that he's dealing with comes out all right, because he was arraigned last Thursday, for the assault charges at the Kentucky bar, if this all turns out in his favor legally, then yes, he's a, you know, he's someone that adjusts well to the ball. I think he's an aggressive physical player in terms of what he can do at the catch point and after the catch point. He runs more like a, he's fluid like a receiver, despite the fact that he's added enough weight to be a tackle breaker and pile mover as a tight end when he's in the second and third level of a defense. So you like that about him. I think the with most tight ends, it's really about how well they adjust to blocking in the NFL. It's a big jump, just like it's a big jump for quarterbacks to look at the complexity of defenses from college to pro. It's a huge jump to take on defensive ends and outside linebackers and even safeties at the NFL level as a run blocker, much less a pass protector. And I think that Higbee, you know, he's going to have to get better at learning how not to overextend, how to use his feet. But certainly the potential to detach him from a formation and provide a more consistent version of a receiver than what, say, Jared Cook provided for the past few years, that's certainly reasonable. And that does make him a guy who can give you at least some situational upside year one as he makes that transition, and maybe even a little bit more.
Okay. Anytime you give up as much as the Rams gave up to jump to number one, you're not going to have the volume of picks normally you would have. But one of the big question marks going into the season for this Rams team is the secondary. They didn't make a draft pick in the secondary. They did bring in some undrafted free agents who I expect will have, you know, realistic chances to make this roster. When you look at some of these secondary players they brought in, are there any guys that jump, you know, off the depth chart to you and guys that you think may be able to compete, you know, for playing time as a rookie?
I would say that, you know, looking at this, I would probably be a little skeptical that that's going to happen right off the bat in terms of anybody who's that they brought in from a rookie standpoint at this stage. But I mean, I think that they, you know, having, you know, LaMarcus Joyner's got another year under his belt. You look at Cody Sensabaugh and his, you probably have some guys here that I think that you're going to look at who are probably going to be able to provide some depth, who are going to be able to do a little bit more on a down by down basis. And I think that, you know, again, with this team, more than anything, what's going to matter is how much the Rams on offense are going to be able to control the football and prolong drives and keep the defense off the field, get an early lead, and then allow that defense to rush the passer and play from an area of strength so that they aren't exposed in their back end.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about before we get into some listener questions and let you get out of here is you look at Goff, you look at Wentz, and I think that there's, well, I guess there is a dispute that you can't go wrong either way. But to me, both of these guys honestly look like they're set to have at least a decent NFL career. When it comes down ultimately to the Rams and their decision to choose Goff, is your understanding that it really was, because Cam and I have been arguing about who, I was Team Wentz, he was Team Goff, but ultimately you look at the volume of throws that you had to choose from with Goff and why it might make an NFL exec just feel that much more comfortable taking him versus maybe what you get out of Carson Wentz. Is there an overemphasis being placed on that? Does it come down to executives and actual face-to-face meetings is what drives their urge to draft a guy? Or what's your understanding of ultimately why the Rams decided it was going to be Goff, not Wentz?
Well, I mean, I think that there are a number of things that can come into play with an NFL team. And certainly one of the subjects you brought up is, you know, how comfortable an executive staff with personnel departments feel about a player. And when it's close, certainly that's going to matter. I think it mattered for them, you know, in Mike Silver's article at NFL.com talking about the fact that they felt comfortable with how good of a leader he was Goff was with his teammates, just across all boundaries, and how much they were excited for him and what he was able to do, taking a team from a really bad situation and then putting them into, you know, a competitive situation. Whereas Wentz was on a team that had been good for a long time, for many years, and he just came in there and continued to get help them get it done. And while that doesn't take away from some of the plays that he made, to me, ultimately, it was the film. I mean, I look at Wentz, and yes, physically, he's bigger. He's got a strong arm. He's more athletic with the ball in his hands. Very impressive, flexible runner who can, you know, bounce off hits and has good burst to be able to run. But when I look at the difference between what Goff does well and what Wentz can't do well, which is being able to move from progression to progression, keep your feet under you, and throw the ball accurately. When Wentz has to change his footwork from the first to second to third progression, his feet lag behind his eyes, he throws inaccurate passes if it's not his first read. Also, Goff, like I said, processes the game very fast. When he sees a tell by a defender, whether he knows that he's going to have single coverage that with a slot receiver against a safety, and he knows that that's something he read pre-snap and it veers away from his planned progression, he'll hit it. He'll attack it. He'll attack it with aggression, and he'll make the play. Whereas Wentz, oftentimes you can tell that he either read the play and chose not to make it, or he didn't see a very simple tell that he could have taken, and instead just went through the math of the progression and would throw the ball even to his first reads where it was bracketed or it was a highly difficult throw compared to what was there on the same side of the field for him in another situation. So to me, Goff is like a guy who not only understands the formulas, but he gets the math. To me, Wentz is a guy right now who often memorizes the formulas, but he doesn't get the math. And to me, quarterbacking is about integrating a great deal of skills that can seem, you know, a long list of them that are physical, intellectual, technical, and psychological. And I think that Goff just integrates more of those into his game than what Wentz does right now. And some of those things, there's no guarantee that Wentz will be able to do that. And I think that's the difference between a guy that Howie Roseman had to trade up for in Philadelphia, even though he said a year ago at the Sloan Institute for Analytics, their symposium, that whenever you trade up for a player, it's a losing proposition most of the time. Them trading up for a guy like Wentz, who they're going to sit for, they say they're going to sit for a year, and a guy like Goff, who I think is much more ready to play, even if he doesn't have a strong season.
I really appreciate the way that you put that and the setup that you gave me for the next question, but I have a great understanding of what you mean now with the math analogy. I recalled I had a teacher there. I went, my childhood was a lot different than anybody else's. And I wound up in residential treatment centers. That's where I graduated high school from, group homes and institutions. But in one of those institutions is really where I picked up my academic go, if you will, and really learned how to process and analyze things. And a big reason for that was my math teacher, Dave Anderson. But when I was a freshman, I didn't understand math at all. And then one day I just sat down and I forced myself in detention to learn a trigonometry problem. And by God, if I didn't get the dang thing right. And then I had to do another one. I had to keep doing them. And then I went into Mr. Anderson and I told him, I said, "Hey man, I'm really ready to move out of pre-algebra." And he goes, "Okay." Gives me a test, which I got the answers, but I couldn't explain the math. And that's really what it was. I knew the answer, but I couldn't explain the math behind it. And he had to sit down with me and explain to me why I wasn't ready to move up, because my fundamental understanding wasn't quite there yet. I got the concepts overall, but I didn't I lack the requisite knowledge to make those subtle adjustments that would be necessary at the next level. So I gained a lot of appreciation of the way you put that. But then you set up perfectly a listener question from Sibley the Great, who wants to know, and they worded it kind of wonky, so I'm going to do my best with this one here. But you mentioned trading up being a losing proposition. So Sibley wants to know, do you trade up for Goff with the loss of picks, or stay where you are and get Paxton Lynch plus what they had to give up?
Yeah, and it's a great question because, you know, I just highlighted a philosophy that at least one team felt like was a losing proposition, which is to trade up, but they went and did it anyway, which tells you the GM didn't think that, the owner did. The owner decided that he wanted to do it and overrode what the GM would have done. In this case, I think that again, when you look at formulas and you look at the math of situations, it may be easy to say the odds are against you of picking a good enough player where it's going to make a difference. And certainly Paxton Lynch is a intriguing talent. He's a guy, you know, he's got that big arm. He's certainly someone who understands the play action game pretty well, and he improvises reasonably well too. But to me, the difference, you know, the difference in terms of the intellectual understanding of the game and the overall accuracy from difficult platforms, difficult situations, I think it's different enough that going with Goff was the right move. Especially, I'll look at it this way. I know a lot of people who in the media who are down on Jeff Fisher. They especially when it comes to offense, you know. But I was a Tennessee Titans fan during that Fisher era, and I know that Jeff Fisher only had a say with the choice of one quarterback with all the quarterbacks that he's had during his career. And other than Jared Goff, that other player was Steve McNair. He didn't get the choice with Vince Young. That was an owner-related choice. He wanted Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler probably would have had a much better career if he didn't get run out of Denver with Josh McDaniels and they let him stay the course to develop and didn't have to go through a slew of coordinators and coaches. And I think that, you look at some of the players that Fisher has either inherited or had to acquire as free agents or through trade, that, you know, he's never really had the chance to pick a player. And I think that McNair was that type of player that he's looking for, someone with mental toughness, someone with that arm, someone with the improvisational skill, someone who hung tough in the pocket. And Steve McNair was great in the pocket, even though he was known early on in his career as a very mobile, game breaking type of runner as well. And I think that Goff has enough of those skills that I think, as much as I would prefer most teams to trade down, trade back, pick up more picks, build a team, and if your mid round quarterback doesn't pay off, you might build in a strong enough team that an elite passer might decide at the end of their career, like a Drew Brees maybe when his contract runs out, or Tom Brady when his contract runs out, that he has another couple of years left and do what Brett Favre or Peyton Manning did or Kurt Warner did at the end of their careers and be able to join a pretty good team that could then that they can lead to a Super Bowl. But if you can't do that and you're going to take the chance to build from scratch, I think Goff has that mind, has the abilities that it was worthwhile doing.
And I know we always get into the chart, you know, the draft chart where this pick is worth this many points and this pick is worth this many points. And based on the old chart, the Titans ended up with more value in this trade. With the draft being such an inexact science in that, yeah, this pick might be this valuable before the draft, but if your pick flounders in the NFL, it's really not worth a whole lot. When you have a player like Jared Goff, who you feel like if you're the Rams can be a franchise quarterback, do you kind of throw those things out of the window, or is there still some, you know, because we're giving up so much, we really have to make sure this guy is going to be who we think he is? If you have that player, do do you not think necessarily about how much value you're giving up, but rather the franchise-changing player that you're going to come away with?
Yeah, I think that's really what it is, because you know, you could also add that there's a guy by the name of Alan Dandar who has an application called Smash Draft, and he used to work for the Philadelphia Eagles and did a lot of analytics to calculate trades, and he brought that to the web, to the general public, and based on his updated chart from, you know, 27 years difference from the Jerry Johnson days, is that actually the Rams got the better end of the deal. But even if they didn't, even if we're going by the old chart, it's a guideline. It's just a guideline. And you have to, more than anything, understand all you're doing is looking at and going, well, the guideline says that we better feel good about this player because he better be worth everything that we're looking at here. And are we sure that we want to go here, or do we have any doubts about him that's going to make us hesitate before we pull the trigger on this? And I think that's what probably happened. They looked at it and said, we don't have any doubts about what he has, what he can offer to us. And when you think about it, this is, you know, it is the difference. I mean, you look at what Peyton Manning did as a quarterback, you know, with the Denver Broncos over the past couple of years, the past three to four years while he was there. But then the difference of what you got with guys like Russell Wilson or you know, Tom Brady, and what can happen to your team when you get guys like that. And I know they came in later rounds, but it does make an impact, because you get a player, especially a quarterback, and it's not so much the whole tried and true thing that people say, which is, well, quarterback, if you think you've got a franchise player, you got to get one, because the bust rate is a 50% rate in the first round, and it's much higher in subsequent rounds after that. Well, yes, that's true. That's what they've studied. But I'd look at it another way. You get a quarterback who's going to be your franchise player, you're probably going to have him for 12 to 14 years, barring some really major contract squabble or horrific injury. And to me, that's 14, 15 years of not having to worry about a position that has a huge bust rate. And that's more valuable, because you're going to, over the next several years, you're going to get to take chances on far many more picks at other positions, and not just about what goes on in this draft.
And our last.
I got one more real quick for you, Matt. Just out of curiosity for myself, you mentioned a website that kind of has the same chart that we can take a look at. Are there any websites out there or any information that you know of that will look at these trades maybe 5 years down the road and look at the players who came from these trades and then put a grade on the trade after that? Is there any place on the web that we can look? Because to me, it would just be a fascinating thing to look at where the trade was graded when it was made, around draft time, and then what the trade ended up being for each of the franchises that were part of that trade.
If there's anyone that does that I know of, it would be my colleague Chase Stewart at Football Perspective. And he's someone that I'm sure has looked at trade charts and has done some analytical studies and looked at things from that standpoint. He would be the first place that I would look to see whether or not he has. And he does fantastic work in this regard. So, I'd give him a check. I'd give him a look and look it up, but I can't guarantee it.
And I just got one last listener question before my own personal curiosity. Sam Ramirez wants to know, what are your expectations on Ogletree with his fifth year getting picked up coming off a serious injury? And is there any chance the Rams make the playoffs with Goff as the quarterback this year, I think is what he meant.
Right. And I think that with Ogletree, you know, what you're looking here is, I mean, you're dealing with a broken leg. That's not anything that is so serious that it's going to impact what he's able to do. I think that he's someone that, you know, he strikes me as, you know, from a physical standpoint, he has that build very much of a Keith Bullock, who was a guy that Jeff Fisher had in Tennessee. someone that can play the pass reasonably well. He's also a guy that has developed into, you know, pretty much an emerging stud at the position. So I think that he's going to be just fine. And do they make the playoffs this year? I think the odds are obviously against them, but what's going to matter is probably more than anything is if Goff gets off to a good start and he has rapport with his receivers. And what I think it's going to take is either Kenny Britt finally looks like the player that all these years, everyone wanted them to be. And they can get enough from one to two other players in the passing game while Todd Gurley just tears it up. If that happens, then I think that maybe they could sneak in as a wild card pick, but it's going to take, you know, the Cardinals or the Seahawks faltering for that to happen. And I just don't see that as the case. I think what you're looking at now is a team that's probably going to go somewhere around 5-11, 6-10. And if they play just out of their minds and play, you know, beyond expectation, then you might be looking at a 7-9-8-8 season. And that's only if the offense is clicking on all cylinders and it means that the defense is getting to play from an advantageous standpoint of what they like to do and they're not put in situations where their weaknesses are always exposed.
Yeah, my answer to can the Rams or any team make the playoff is henceforth going to be Leicester City. The answer to any question, can this team pull it off, is just going to be Leicester City, which actually works out really well for my final question to you. I'm a big Premier League guy. I talk about it a lot on Twitter. I'm sure you've seen me tweet about it, but there is a vested interest with Kroenke in the Premier League in what he owns there in London with Arsenal. And you look at maybe the way that Arsenal has been run the past couple of, let's just say the past two decades, but Kroenke's ownership with them started about 2007. So you really can't look at it anything past that. But when I look at the Rams and I look at Arsenal and I look at how they deal with their off seasons, I look at how both guys have coaches where if you're a fan, you could make maddeningly sound arguments against keeping these coaches. But if you're an owner, when you look at what Wenger and Jeff Fisher bring to the table, both in terms of personal development, youth development, and getting players ready to play at a high, high level, I don't think that there's anything you could say against those two gentlemen. Do you see the same similarities with Arsenal and the Rams, or have you ever even looked at that?
Yeah, I spend so much time studying football tape that I really have no time to watch any other sport these days. But the way that you described it, I would agree. Jeff Fisher is a solid football coach. He was neither as good as people made him out to be with the Titans, nor as bad as they made him out to be at the end of his Titans career and during his time with the Rams. And what he needs is good players around him. You can talk about unimaginative schemes and choices at defensive coordinator, but if you don't have good wide receivers, if you're drafting gadget players like Jared Cook, signing gadget players like Jared Cook and drafting gadget players like Tavon Austin, that doesn't really fit to me what good football is like in terms of personnel in the NFL. And maybe Tavon Austin can emerge into a more well-rounded player. But when they drafted Todd Gurley, when they had Trey Mason, that sent a signal to me that Jeff Fisher got his Eddie George. Now he's looking for his Steve McNair. Then he's going to be looking for the next Derek Mason or the next, you know, Frank Wycheck or, you know, reliable skill players who can get it done and make plays for you. They haven't had that. The Rams have just not had that in a while. And I think that they finally have recognized, you know, look, let's build the foundation here and continue to build on it. And I like the fact that maybe the Rams will keep patient with their coaching staff, because one of the worst things that NFL teams do is that they cycle through coaching staffs too fast. They cycle through quarterbacks too fast. They put them on the field too early most of the time. I think Goff is a guy who can handle it, but give them some time. Give them some time to make mistakes. Give these players time to gel. Give a system time to gel. And don't think that you have to do it in a year or two because some other team did it in a year or two. Because if you do things the right way, especially with a proven guy like Fisher, you could end up with a team that ends up being a contender for the next 6 to 8 years, and they're dealing from a position of strength rather than always trying to clean up somebody else's mess.
I really like the way that you put that, Matt. And with that, I will give you this opportunity to let people know about anything you have coming up. You've already told them where they can find you on Twitter, but anything you want to mention right now, this is your opportunity.
Sure. Well, you know, for the past 11 years, I've been writing the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. It's a 1,500-page book on rookie skill prospects. 300 of it are what most people look at. The other 1,100 are really my play-by-play notes, all my notes about how I go about grading players and what the process is about. And that came out in April. But the second part of this publication is a post-draft analysis, where I take a look at where the players got drafted and I re-rank them based on a 2 to 3 year outlook for fantasy owners. So if you're a fantasy owner and you play in dynasty leagues or even redraft leagues, the RSP and RSP post-draft are a 2-for-1 book that you get both of them for the total price of $19.95. And I just encourage you to go to Twitter, check it out, ask people about it. You don't have to include me on it. Just ask around. People will tell you, you know, about the quality of the work that's there. And check my work out at www.mattwaldmanrsp.com if you want to see a little bit more of what kind of goes into it with all the free draft content that's out there.
And I will tell you this as one of those people, Matt came into my life through Ryan Burns, who tweeted, "About to order my Matt Waldman RSP pre-draft as I always do every year, and it is worth every single cent." And yep, that's basically what Matt is saying. If you go and you ask the Twitterverse, you're going to come up with about 1,000 people who will say the exact same thing about him. If you want to know about a player, then get that guide. It does more for you than we could ever do in this podcast. But with that, Matt, I do want to thank you for loaning so much of your time to us today to talk about Goff, the Rams, and where this project is headed, because it's a fascinating project and it's one that's befuddled Cam and myself, who, by the way, Cam wishes to send his regards, but he had an emergency meeting pop up and took off on us. So I do want to say thank you for him, but he had to bail a little bit early.
Well, thanks again to Cam and Josh. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Matt. And we will go ahead and let you get out of here and back to your busy film watching schedule, sir.
Thank you.
And with that, because it's just me and I can no longer carry on a podcast by myself. Actually, that's a lie. I can handle some of your listener questions, which I'm going to do right now. Rapid fire here at the end before we say goodbye on the Rams podcast. Calvin wants to know if there's been any info on season tickets. I'm not quite sure what you mean by this, Calvin, because there's actually been quite a bit of info, but I think you mean as to when they're shipping, and that I don't know. They have not yet shot that information out. But if you were looking for pricing or general inquiries about that, all of that information is available. Season tickets started about $360, I think, is the cheapest, and they go up to about $3,000 for the most expensive, in my opinion, a really fair deal, actually, for NFL's tickets. And I actually know a couple of friends who invested in them. They're not necessarily even Rams fans, but they thought the deal was so fantastic and were so excited to have the NFL back in this area that they went ahead and bought them. So that information is out there. Calvin, if you had something more specific, shoot us another question again, and I'll try and get you some more info on that. But if you were asking about shipping dates, I don't actually think that they have that out. Now, Oscar, you wanted to know if the Rams are going to make the playoffs. As I did ask Matt, I think the answer is Leicester City. If you don't know about Leicester City, they were 5,000 to 1 to win the Premier League, and they won the Premier League. That's really the answer to everything now. Can a team do it? Well, if a 5,000 to 1 underdog can win the league, in a league that traditionally only has had 5 people win it in the past 20 years, then yeah, the Rams can make the playoffs. And LaMerica's news, you asked, which I think Cam did kind of throw in there at the beginning for Matt, as to any of the wide receivers or tight ends likely to make an impact immediately. I think the answer is maybe. And that's not the answer that you want to hear. But like Matt said, it's really just going to be how quickly they pick up this offense. How much of the playbook did the Rams open up for Goff is really what it comes down to. When you're talking about a rookie quarterback and a limited playbook, it's harder for other guys on the other end of the spectrum to make an impact because there's not as much of the playbook for them to be impactful upon. They cannot really exert their agency on the situation because the full run of the playbook's not available to the guy that's throwing the ball. So I don't know that we'll see them make a significant impact, but whether or not they make an impact on the team is a different story. And I do think that what you could see with one or two of these guys drafted is that rookie quarterbacks in particular, guys entering into a new system, tend to grab on to one or two receivers and develop a relationship with them right out of the gate. If Goff develops that with one of these rookies as opposed to a guy like Tavon Austin or Kenny Britt, then yeah, you could definitely see one of these guys make an impact right away. But it'll really be up to how Fisher and how much of the playbook they open up for Goff, as well as how much of a connection he has coming out of training camp with any one particular skill position player. And with that, I think that that is about where I'm going to leave it today. Like I said, Cam had to take off a little bit early. I'm Josh Webb. We got some stuff going up on the website today, some fresh video content. Scout was going through some changes on the back end that kept me, it actually locked me out, so I wasn't able to make posts. I got some of that corrected today now that we're back on a business schedule. It's not the weekend, that is to say. So you'll start to see more content flying up there. And as always, if you want to get at us or ask us any questions or recommend a guest for us, you can feel free to do so. Find me on Twitter at Fight on Twist, the site at LA_Rams Report, and you can follow Cam on Twitter at Cam Worrell. I am Josh Webb, and thank you so much for listening today to our NFL draft special with Matt Waldman. We will catch you next time here on the Flipping Tables podcast. We'll be right back.